Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.
Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. If you really think about it, it's an amazing job that what mothers do, creating a real live baby from a cluster of cells. For 9 months, our bodies miraculously and secretly nurture new life, doing what no scientist can do, producing a baby capable of independent life, and then often, if a mother's breastfeeding, continuing to provide nutrition for them. But what cost does this come at? Traditionally, it's all about the baby. Are they okay? Are their needs met? Are they content? But what about the mother? What about the human whose body has single-handedly nurtured this miracle? What has this gargantuan feat cost her? Amazingly, it's only relatively recently that we even have a name for postnatal depletion, and it's high time we started talking about it properly and taking it seriously. With me today, I've got my sister, GP and co-founder of The Parenthood, Dr. Kiara Hunt, to have a frank conversation about postnatal depletion. Kiara, thanks so much for joining me today. This is obviously a conversation we have on the bump class a little bit, but I just want to go back to basics. What exactly do we mean by postnatal depletion?
Yeah, hi Marina. So yes, it's definitely a conversation I've been having for years with my patients, and we've been having for a long time on the bump class, but never really given it a term. And when I came across the term postnatal depletion, it resonated. It was a great way of describing a group of feelings and symptoms. So now we all know that, you know, carrying a baby, delivering a baby, and then the enormous emotional and physical life changes that go with becoming a mother take a huge toll on the mother's health. And it takes an incredible amount of resources, both physically and emotionally, to conceive, carry, and deliver a baby. And those resources are depleted by doing so. And if we don't mitigate that by eating well, resting well, having a good, robust support network, it can cause symptoms in the mother, without a doubt, not just for months after the baby's born, but if not managed, then for years. And we've said, we were talking about it this morning in a class, weren't we? But, you know, in order to look after, to be able to look after our children well, we need to look after ourselves. It's the most important thing. And interestingly, so the term postnatal depletion was actually coined by an Australian doctor, called Dr. Oscar Serelak, who's written a really good book, actually, which I read recently, called The Postnatal Depletion Cure, which looks at what exactly postnatal depletion means and you know, in quite a lot of detail, how we can help women in that postnatal period. And essentially what it is a group of symptoms that cultures throughout history and across the world have recognized, you know, for hundreds of years and have taken steps to mitigate. But in our Western culture, it's become largely ignored, superseded by this sort of desire to get back to normal quickly and, you know, for women to get back to work and to be this sort of super mum, you know, looking after the baby, nourishing the baby and getting back to life quickly. And the symptoms of postnatal depletion stem from not just physical symptoms, but the hormonal changes, the psychological aspects of the life change that goes with having a baby, and of course the physiological changes that happen because your body has nourished this baby and your continues to do so even after they're born. And it's actually just remembering that the body, for evolutionary reasons, favors the baby. So when you're pregnant and you've got your placenta doing such a good job of using the mother's blood to nourish the baby, everything the baby needs goes to the baby. And if there isn't quite enough for mother and baby, then baby gets it. And the same for breastfeeding. Everything the baby needs is put into breast milk. And if that means depleting the mother of her stores, so be it, in terms of the body's idea. So that's essentially what postnatal depletion means. But it's not a diagnosis. It's not a condition. It's just a series of different factors that come into play in that period after a mother's had a baby that can cause her to feel pretty awful.
I think this understanding that babies are essentially, they sort of behave like parasites, don't they? I think it's so important because I was reading recently that there was a study done on, like a big kind of population study done in, I think it was in the Netherlands during a sort of famine. And they realized that there was no difference in terms of the baby's kind of outcomes if they had experienced the famine in their mother's uterus and when they were breastfeeding, but the rest of the population lost weight massively. And it just shows that exactly that the babies will take everything that they need. And it's the mothers that are the ones that suffer, which is basically an allegory for motherhood, isn't it?
Yeah. But it doesn't have to be. And actually, I think it's something we've lost in Western culture. When you look at other cultures, there's a common theme in lots of different parts of the world. It's not just one country or one culture, but there's often this theme of confinement, which sounds quite barbaric to us in the West, you know, confining a woman after she's had a baby. But actually, what they're doing is making sure the woman has absolute privacy, absolute time to bond with her baby, lots and lots of people on hand to teach her about mothering, lots of people to look after her, provide her with food and sleep and nutrition and support. For most cultures, it's a month that they would be in confinement. So, you know, whereas we, you know, we see most mothers striding down the high street with their pram, you know, days after their baby's born.
Well, and in America, maternity leave is 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Back to work, full time.
Yeah.
And it's a medical condition.
There's this concept of the fourth trimester of pregnancy. And actually, you know, that's 3 months of your body needing to recuperate. And again, other studies look at the first 100 days of the mother's life, in terms of when she's needing additional support. And we just don't really think of it like that in our culture. And I think we need to a bit more.
And is it a medical condition, postnatal depletion? Is it recognized by doctors as a thing?
No, and I don't think it is a medical, I don't think it should be a medical condition or even a diagnosis. It's part of life. It's part of what goes with having a baby and just needs to be mitigated. It's not a diagnosis as such. I mean, everyone who conceives and carries and delivers a baby will go through some postnatal depletion. It's just whether or not they manage it well as to whether or not they'll be symptomatic of it or have problems associated with it. And it's not like that there's a single treatment, in inverted commas, that's going to work. It's taking steps to prevent it in the first place and mitigate it, you know, treat it if you are having symptoms of it. And it's going to be slightly different for everyone. And some people won't notice it at all and will bounce back much quicker than others who will take a bit more time.
Well, and typically it's going to be those who have had that kind of nurturing in that fourth trimester that are presumably going to feel it less, the mothers
prepared for that fourth trimester, for that first 3 months of the baby's life, but you know, in the pregnancy already planned how they're going to manage it, how they're going to be supported, how they're going to eat and sleep, etc.
And what are the signs of postnatal depression?
Again, it's sort of there's lots of different symptoms, and a lot of them are what we just consider as completely normal for new mothers. It's some of it overlaps a bit with the symptoms of postnatal depression, and that's something to discuss. But you know, that feeling of being overwhelmed, being quite irritable, feeling quite vulnerable, being very tired, you know, tired but stimulated, you know, at the same time, feeling quite anxious or low in mood, not sleeping, you know, things like the skin and hair not being quite what it was. Some people have a sort of sensitivity to light and sound, or may just feel quite sort of unwell generally. You know, I have lots of people coming to see me in that first year just not feeling well, but not being able to necessarily put their finger on what it is that they're feeling.
Oh, I see what you mean. I mean, and a lot of that is, I mean, just like can carry on. I remember feeling like I was in a fog of tiredness for about 5 years when my children were small. And that I'm sure is to do with postnatal depression, but it's also to do with the fact that, you know, looking after a small child or two small children is just really, really hard and you're not getting much sleep.
That's what I mean. That is part of it. You know, just the very act of looking after a baby or various small children without the support network and the self-care and the food and the sleep that you need, it is that's what postnatal depression is in itself. Do you see what I mean? So it's not one or the other. And I think just women who've had a baby understanding a bit about that and knowing that people often are so surprised that I say to them, I think it's just this postnatal period that's making you feel like that. It's not something, some dreadful diagnosis that you've got that's making you feel like this.
So how can you, well, first I want to talk about how we treat it, but is there anything we can do to prevent it from happening? Or is it just something that happens to everyone? I mean, I know it obviously does happen to everyone, but just in terms of it, you being really seriously depleted.
Anything to prevent it from happening in the first place?
Yeah, becoming really depleted in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, as I said, because everyone goes through it. But I think you can definitely start thinking about it when you're even thinking about getting pregnant. You know, if you're planning a pregnancy, making sure you that year leading up to it, you're leading a healthy lifestyle. And we all know what that means. It's not rocket science. You know, eating healthy, whole foods, you know, making sure that you're eating a variety of foods, that you've got plenty of fish and fish oils and that sort of thing, taking your preconception vitamins, which will have everything in it that you need. Making sure you're getting into good habits, that you're exercising regularly, that you're going to bed at the right sort of time, that if you're stressed, you're finding ways to mitigate that stress and you're understanding your body and finding ways that you can help yourself feel less stressed, less anxious, less low. So start focusing. And I think a lot of us haven't done this until we get pregnant. Start sort of focusing a bit more on you and on self-care and what works for you. So those sort of things you can definitely do to prepare. Then, you know, when you're pregnant, again, you know, food is important, supplements are important, but also, like, you know, we talk in the bump class, you don't have time to cook healthy food when you've got a newborn baby. So if you don't have that wonderful culture of confinement and being looked after, then fill the freezer with healthy food. Get a cookbook when you're pregnant to work out what foods are really beneficial in that postnatal period and cook things and put them in the freezer. Look at healthy delivery options if you live somewhere where that's an option. You know, start to rally family and friends around you. Ask for help, something we're really bad at in Western society. So, you know, if we don't have that village around us who are going to step in automatically, then try and create that in some way so that you've got that support network.
And presumably too, you know, it's about managing your pregnancy in terms of just understanding what your body's doing every day before you go to work, before you've honored the commitments and gone to the wedding and organized the hen party and all the other million things that I see women doing the whole time. You know, certainly that third trimester is time to slow down and don't wait until, you know, week 37 to slow down. You sort of really need to action that slowing down from as soon as you enter that third trimester so that you are as undepleted as it is possible to be by the time you go into labor.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And some of those things, as we've just talked about, you can mitigate as much as possible. But some of it will also come from just the very action of carrying the baby and the depletion from the baby. Some of it is going to come from that sudden change in hormones, especially that affects the brain after the baby's born, that gives you that brain fog, baby brain. You know, that's very difficult to mitigate prevent, as it were. You know, the actual labor itself and in some cases the sort of experience, which can be have been quite difficult for some women, is going to be a contributing factor to postnatal depletion. Whether they've lost blood in the birth, that's going to make a difference. Whether or not they breastfeed, how well the mother's able to sleep and how much sleep she's able to get in the period after the baby's born. Even, you know, just the very disruption of her natural circadian rhythm in that postnatal period, which has got to happen because she's got to feed the baby. But that is all, again, going to contribute to that postnatal depletion. And then on top of that, in the West, the social isolation, the lack of support, the lack of the sort of village around helping raise the child, the increase of stresses. That's that's, you know, people often say to me, well, why? Surely it doesn't make sense for women to get postnatally deplete. But, you know, you look at that long list of things and you realize that, you know, it's not that surprising that women do.
I remember watching a nature documentary once about flamingos. And when female flamingos have their young, they lose their pink because the pink in their feathers is actually from the sort of nutrients, and they lose their pink for about a year. And I've often thought it would be really useful if women had a sort of physical manifestation of the depletion that they are experiencing from having grown a whole nother human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That would definitely be useful, because we tend to think that women just sort of bounce back quite quickly and you know, can get back to work, to life completely normally.
Well, just because they've basically put on some makeup and kind of styled their hair, they look really well, like they should be sort of normal again. But actually, like flamingos, they have totally lost their pink.
Yeah. That should be a new terminology. I think you've lost your pink.
And what about if you really feel that you're massively depleted, kind of beyond what you can cope with, and you want to do something about it? Is this something you visit your doctor about?
No, I mean, I think if you're feeling awful, you definitely want to see your doctor, because there may well be something that's really easily fixed. That you know, I often do a checkup at, most of my patients will come at about 3 months for a postnatal checkup to talk about this sort of thing. And, you know, blood tests are really helpful, looking at, you know, whether they've lost blood, whether they're anemic, whether we can just top up their iron stores a little bit. Often their vitamin levels are a bit low and they can be adjusted, or some of the minerals. So, you know, and you know, deficiencies is very different from insufficiencies. So, you know, if you are really deficient in a vitamin or mineral, you'll have, quite specific physical symptoms as a result of it, you know. Zinc deficiency, you'll have white spots in your nails. B12 deficiency, you'll have a kind of sore tongue, you know, that sort of thing. But your levels have to get really quite low for that. And that doesn't mean they can't be optimized by changing diet or having some sort of supplement. So some things are really easy to check for in blood tests, and other things are a bit less obvious, because your doctor may say, oh, well, your, you know, zinc levels look fine, but actually they're perhaps not quite as good as they could be. So I think that's where if you're feeling a certain way, looking at specific nutrients can be quite helpful, and adjusting those.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And should postnatal women all be taking postnatal vitamins, or is a healthy diet enough?
Well, a healthy diet's enough if you're not too depleted to start with. But if you need repletion to get everything back up to normal, then, you know, then it's worth doing that for about 3 months, depending on what you're talking about, which vitamins or minerals you're talking about. But you'd probably take some for about 3 months, and then the diet alone should be enough. But it's quite difficult with just diet to correct depletion. So I do think postnatal vitamins are really quite helpful. And if they can be sort of tailored specifically to what you're lower in, that can be even more helpful. So increasingly doctors are open to that and aware of that and able to advise more specifically for mothers.
So in an ideal world, there'd be a blood test. They'd say, it's looking like your iron levels and your zinc levels are really low, so let's give you a tailored set of supplements to take that would address
that? They may, if a doctor might not know too much about it, they may say, well, I think it might be worth speaking to a nutritionist about this, or, you know, that sort of thing, or you buy a book that gives you some ideas. But yes, it's not a one size fits all necessarily in terms of the postnatal vitamins.
Yeah. But presumably what's also important is that not to expect that you can continue life at 100 miles an hour and not rest and not acknowledge the massive thing that your body's done by taking kind of expensive supplements.
No, totally. Totally. And that's why this whole, it's almost a syndrome of postnatal depletion. It's not something that can just be fixed by taking, you know, handfuls of vitamins and not sleeping or not, you know, not looking after yourself. It's got to be a complete life assessment, really, not for a particularly long period of time. It can just be a few months of really focusing on that, and then getting back to normal.
But essentially, society kind of needs to understand that, as well as the women themselves. Yep. You know, the idea that really a pregnancy is 4 trimesters, yep, and that women just don't bounce back, however much they like to think you.
The trouble is, they on the face of it, you can bounce back, and you can be wheeling your pram around, and you can be doing your social activities, and you can be, but you're probably going to suffer for a longer time, even just to a small extent, if you do that. And you're much better off in the longer term, really focusing on repletion and then getting back to normal.
And sleep is obviously really important in terms of that as well, because not only are you catching up, you know, presumably sleep allows your body to heal, it allows it to regenerate, but also, you know, with a newborn in the house, you're probably not going to be mm-hmm. getting much sleep. So presumably in terms of postnatal depression, sleep plays a huge role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, and especially in the first month, you know, if you can replenish yourself with sleep, lots of sleep in the first month, then it's going to be much easier in the sort of months following that. Even if the baby's not sleeping, you know, long periods at night at 4 or 5 months, if you've really kind of caught up in that first month, you're going to be reaping the rewards.
Is it possible to bank sleep before your baby's born, to sort of go into sort of labour really, really high on sleep, or is that not how sleep works?
No, I don't think it's, I think it's almost the other way around. I think you can much harder if you're sleep deprived before. I think if you're regularly getting 8 hours a night, you know, sleeping for 10 hours a night before is not necessarily going to make that much difference. But if you're going into labour having, you know, which a lot of pregnant women, of course, do, because pregnancy is uncomfortable and difficult to sleep in, you know, if you've had months of restless, unproductive sleep, then that does make it harder without a doubt.
And how long, you know, do most women, you know, if they're not really pushing the boat, how long is it normal to feel depleted for after having a baby?
Well, there's definitely not a straightforward answer to that, because that will entirely depend on how it's been managed right from the sort of preconception through the pregnancy and afterwards. So I've seen and regularly look after women who've been on it, you know, from the beginning and have really focused on their health and their care. And of course, especially with number one, that's easier to do. Once you're having number 3 or 4, it's harder. And you know, a lot of those women are feeling back to normal by 2 or 3 months after the baby's born. But I've also looked after women who are still feeling the effects of postnatal depletion years after their babies are born. So I think it totally depends on what it is you're experiencing, why it is you're experiencing it, and then it's easier to predict how long it's going to take to get better.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, I mean, it's one of those kind of, well, few, but probably more than we think, things that possibly less well-developed societies do better than developed societies in terms of supporting women in the postnatal period and understanding the significance and physical impact of having grown and delivered a baby.
Definitely. Definitely. And that's why I think a lot of these cultures have got it right, by sort of putting such an emphasis on women in that month after they've given birth. And we've lost it in the West. Now we can make a better hybrid of that, because there's lots of things about lots of sort of traditional confinement that I don't think is great for the mother and baby, but we can combine that support and that nourishment and that nurturing of the mother alongside our knowledge of what type of supplements, what type of food, what type of sort of emotional stimulation and social stimulation is appropriate and best for the woman. We just haven't quite got there yet.
And a lot of it is education. It's, you know, preparing women not only for the birth of their baby, but for the recovery afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I'd say it's good advice for most women, if you can, to go and have a checkup, not just 6 weeks, because 6 weeks is a normal checkup, but it's everything is still so new and you've got quite a lot of adrenaline still going on and you're still often not completely recovered from the birth. So I'd say it's a 3-4 months to go and if you're not feeling quite right, to go and have a checkup and possibly some blood tests. And even simple things like the pregnancy and breastfeeding can often disrupt the thyroid a little bit, and that can make you feel quite tired. That's really easy to fix. Or as I said, your iron or vitamin D levels are a bit low, or zinc. Zinc's often quite depleted in you know, postnatally, and that has a huge effect on mood and can be easily topped up. Magnesium is one of the other ones. You know, there've been lots of studies now looking at the role of micronutrients and trace elements, and it's thought like things like zinc, magnesium, iron, and copper, I think, are the ones that are most sort of widely studied, looking at deficiencies or imbalances of those being associated with mood, not even just postnatally, but generally. So it's worth checking those things, and it's worth being aware of what you're eating, how you can replenish those kind of naturally or with supplements. And if you've got a bit of a baseline of blood test to go from, I think that can be helpful. As well as, of course, ruling out anything else that could be causing the way you're feeling. So you do a general blood test looking at how everything's functioning to rule out anything that is more medical.
Because also it's worth just considering the impact on the baby that having a depleted mother will have. You know, if we're depleted, we're not firing on all cylinders, and that is going to have a massive impact on a child. In, you know, they say that the most impactful time of a child's life is the first 1,000 days, which is basically, you know, conception till they're two. And if for a year of that time the mother of this child is physically depleted, they're not going to really be able to be as present and active as the baby needs.
Yeah, definitely. And that goes with everything. As we've talked about, postnatal depletion, this term is a very broad word. And I'd say that the sort of mood side of it, you know, even if it's not postnatal depression or postnatal anxiety, the mood side of it is what affects the baby the most, because that's what's going to determine the mother's interaction with the baby. It's what's going to determine the activities the mother feels able to do with the baby, and the relationship that subsequently is developing. So you know, and a lot of the symptoms of being a bit depleted are you know, are low mood and feeling irritable and feeling, you know, a bit wretched. But importantly, it is not the same as postnatal depression. It's very different. And so I think if you're listening to this and confused about whether you have just a bit of postnatal depletion or whether you have postnatal mood disorder, then definitely go and talk to your doctor and describe exactly how you're feeling. You know, in postnatal depression, it's really quite serious and sometimes quite dangerous medical condition where you are really not taking any enjoyment at all out of life, and things that you would have taken joy and pleasure from give you nothing back, and sometimes feeling so awful that it can be quite scary. And we've done lots of podcasts on postnatal depression, but it can be a bit of a fine line in terms of the overlap. So make sure you're clear on what is the problem.
And in terms of sort of more resources, are NHS GPs the people to go and speak to, or is that quite difficult? Or
I mean, listen, of course, it's, you know, in England, we've got with the NHS, which is just amazing resource, you know, that doesn't cost anything to the individual, and everyone trying their best, but limited in terms of time and resources. So it's quite possible you don't get much back from your GP, and maybe they won't be able to do the blood test that you want if you don't really have symptoms that necessitate it according to the guidelines they have to follow. So but certainly everyone, you know, everyone will have an understanding of that. Every doctor should have an understanding of that. But if you're not getting what you want from your healthcare provider, I think it's worth trying different avenues and potentially different doctors and seeing where you get. It's definitely a conversation that is happening but isn't necessarily embraced by everyone yet.
And what about books? You mentioned that a few books at the beginning. Is there anything you'd recommend?
Well, I have to say this, this Postnatal Depletion Cure is a really good book that I've enjoyed reading, and gives lots of information about, you know, things to look out for and think are quite productive, proactive things to do to help. So that can be really helpful. And I think armed with knowledge, if you've read something like that, then it's much easier to go to your healthcare provider and ask for tests. I mean, also increasingly you're able to do a lot of these tests remotely, pay privately for them, but it doesn't cost too much. And you can request what it is you want and then take the results to your doctor, and that might be a good way of doing it. Because it's a relatively new concept that is being written about in Western culture, there's not a huge amount of resource, but online we'll also, I'm sure you'll find some resources that can help.
But the key, I suppose, is anticipating it and kind of just recognizing and acknowledging that this is a big deal that women have to cope with.
And the most important thing you said there is having a plan. So, you know, we have a birth plan, although arguably that's not a great thing, but a birth preference is quite good. But having a postnatal plan, you know, thinking about that when you're pregnant, who's going to support you and how are you going to be supported? What self-care do you want? What self-care do you think you'll need? What techniques and what do you know works for you in terms of relaxing? And how can you incorporate that into a kind of postnatal routine? How are you planning to catch up on sleep? And who's going to make sure that happens? Who's going to be helping you with food and nutrition? And especially in that first month, this isn't a plan for forever. This is just, you know, if you can sort of take, we can take from other cultures this sort of idea of being really nurtured in that first month and just set it up so that however that happens, we've got that support. That's far and away the most important thing we can do.
Well, it's also so much easier if that was always the plan. It wasn't the plan, then it's like, you've got that feeling of sort of failed and unexpected, whereas if all women are told you've got the first, the second, the third and the fourth trimester and this is what to expect, then it's just going to be so much easier to deal with. And I suppose, you know, a lot of these things, they cost money, whether it's the blood test, whether it's a bit of extra help so that you can sleep, or whether it's, you know, spending a bit more money on food because it's convenient, because it's already prepared. But at least you can kind of think about it. And personally, with children sort of on the other side, you know, babies need kind of probably far less than Instagram tells us. And I'm sure most of us spend way more money on stuff that promises the earth and anti-colic this and miracle that, when actually that money is better spent nurturing the mother and putting her in a position where she is better able to be a mother and deal with the kind of rigors of being a new mother and having produced a child than, you know, some kind of miracle swaddle that promises to have your baby sleeping through the night.
Exactly. And you know, people are very generous with, you know, when people have had babies, and maybe again, making your plan of what setup you need and you know, what the costs associated are. And when people are offering, you know, to help when you've had a baby, instead of bringing another baby grill or a pair of mini baby Converse or something that's completely useless, say, actually, you know what, I'd love if you could cook me, you know, three meals and deliver them, or I'd love it if you could take the baby for a walk for a couple of hours after a feed so I can have a good sleep, or, you know, that would be a brilliant present, and sort of have that planned and set up for that first month. There are ways of doing it without spending lots of money.
Yeah, it's time. I remember our mother saying that her mother-in-law would come every Tuesday or something to look after me when I was a baby, and she just said it was just one of the best things that I had, was just this sort of regular Tuesday afternoon where, you know, I could do my own thing. And she was very grateful for that.
Yeah.
Brilliant, Kiara. Well, I think this is another really important conversation. I'm really glad we've had it. I really hope that women will listen to this podcast, but also partners will listen to this podcast, and families, you know, so often the kind of wider family is like, what can I do for my child? And it's not necessarily about buying stuff. It's about doing stuff and potentially even altering the mindset. So I hope this will be really relevant for kind of grandparents and partners and siblings and that whole kind of support network. And hopefully by having this conversation a bit more widely, we can generate the sort of acceptance that there is a fourth trimester and women, you know, don't just pop out a baby and then pop back into life. That's a sort of long recovery period.
Exactly. And it's a small investment, a short period of time for a long-term gain.
Perfect, Chiara. Well, thank you so much. I'll put the details of those books in the show notes. But in the meantime, thanks for downloading this episode of The Parenthood. You can subscribe, rate and review us wherever you find this podcast. It does actually really, really help in terms of listenership. And we're so grateful for lovely reviews. You can also follow me on Instagram. I'm at marina.fogel. But in the meantime, from Chiara and me, thanks for listening.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.